It's people who are wondering to themselves, how can I make sure that my money doesn't mess up my kids? How can I best share the love of Christ in a hurting and broken world? How can I be sure that when I show up in eternity and God says, let's talk about how you stewarded my stuff, how can I be more confident that he's going to say, good job, I like what you did there? It's people who are wrestling with those kinds of questions.
Welcome to the Generosity Now podcast, where we bring you inspiring stories of generosity and whole life stewardship. Our goal is to showcase individuals and organizations making a positive impact on our communities and across the globe. I'm your host, Eric Most, president of the National Christian Foundation, Rocky Mountain Region, and I'm joined by my incredible co-host, Lori Bosser, VP on our team. Lori, how are you doing today?
Eric, it's Friday. I'm excited. We've had a super productive week, and we get to do a podcast with Amy today.
Absolutely. Well, we are in the middle of a solution series where we're highlighting organizations to help solve some of your giving frustrations. And this one, even maybe some of your investing frustrations. So in this episode, we are talking with Amy Minnick, co-founder and general counsel for the Impact Foundation, who seeks to facilitate the ability to invest charitable capital for economic, social, and spiritual transformation. Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me this morning.
We are so glad you're here. Hey, Amy, would you tell us a little bit about yourself? Give us a little background of who Amy is. Love to know growing up and where you are today and life for you.
Yeah. I grew up in Kansas City. I'm the youngest of five kids. And I was probably a studious child. I looked up my high school yearbook recently because my oldest son now is in high school. And he got me kind of reminiscing what was high school like in the 90s. And I remembered that I was voted most likely to be the next Mother Teresa by my high school class, which wasn't actually a compliment at my high school. It was a big 500-person class at a public school. I was that kid. I met Jesus through a youth ministry called K-Life. We went to Mexico my freshman year. K-Life grew out of Canicut camps. We went to Juarez, Mexico, and it was the typical short-term mission trip. I've read When Helping Hearts, but I stand by the short-term mission trip as an opportunity to see new things, to expose kids to things that to life different than the one that they're used to. And so we were in Juarez, Mexico. We had built houses all week. We were doing a little church service on a concrete floor surrounded by concrete block walls. And I met Jesus. My small group leader washed my feet. And when she washed my feet, the Holy Spirit came to me. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely clear that everything I'd heard about Jesus was true, and that he was real, and that the Holy Spirit was upon me. And I didn't have any language to put to that, but I knew that I needed to figure out what it meant to follow Jesus. And so that was that. At 15, I tried to figure out how to follow Jesus.
That's amazing. Love hearing that. You're absolutely right. The book, The Paradigm, When Helping Hurts, if we go with the realization that a lot of times those short-term mission trips are more about us, the people that go, than the people that we're impacting, God can absolutely do amazing things. So that's a great testimony. Love that. All right. So from 15 to now today, there's just a couple years as well. What's been some of that kind of career arc?
Just a couple of years. That's kind of you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So after high school, I thought I wanted to be a doctor. But it turns out I ended up at this Jesuit school, and the Jesuits make you take all these core classes. And one of them was philosophy. And I encountered in the study of philosophy a deeper understanding of who God is and how he's ordained the world and who I am in relationship to him. And I also got to watch my professors undo the worldview of my fellow students and give them a biblical perspective without using any of that language. But I watched 19-year-old kids figure out that they'd accepted a worldview that didn't align with actually what they'd been taught to believe, and then come around to this idea that, oh my gosh, there is truth. It's not just my truth and your truth, but there's a truth. And I was like, that was really cool. I want to do that for the rest of my life. And so I thought I wanted to get a PhD in philosophy. And thankfully, the Lord rescued me from that and sent me to law school. And I went to law school just because the Lord told me to, really, not knowing exactly what I would want to do. I got out, practiced for a couple of years, and intersected with NCF when I was about 30. How old was I? 28, 29, somewhere in there. My parents had taken a company public, and they started a private foundation. They're not private foundation people. They don't like rules. They don't like lawyers. They don't like forms. They should never have had a private foundation. They converted it to a donor advised fund. And in the process of that, I discovered this whole thing of donor advised funds. And I remember meeting the people from NCF for the first time. And somebody said something about, you know, we believe this work is a calling. And you should pray about whether or not you're called to this work. And I got out to my car and I'm like, Lord, I don't know what calling means. I don't know if I'm called to something, but it's abundantly clear to me that St. Irenaeus says the glory of God is man fully alive. Hmm. And that's incredible that the God of the universe can be magnified, can be glorified when we are living the full life as he intended it. And I didn't have the language for it. I'd never been through a journey of generosity. I wasn't steeped in the theology of this, but I just sort of instinctively believed that generosity is one of the primary ways that we can become fully alive. Because as we let go of our grip on ourselves and the things that we think we own, we get to encounter him better. I was like, I want to be a part of that. So that's how I got to NCF.
And then from your time at the National Christian Foundation with us, we had a lot of givers that were wanting to make different types of investments and alternative investments. And as, at least as I understand the story to be, we kind of went to the investment committee at NCF and general counsel, and you were part of that even team at some point for some time. And there was just not a comfort level to allow that to go directly from NCF. So the idea was, hey, how about you and Jeff Johns go and start the community, to go and start Impact Foundation. Do I understand that to be true?
Well, you give me more credit than I should have because you said that we went and got permission. That wasn't really the way that we rolled back then. What actually happened was somebody, a giver, called us and said, we want to make this loan to a ministry and not just a grant. And I said, I can figure that out. We can do that. And so we did that in our own little affiliate. And then NCF corporate caught wind of it. And they're like, hey, yeah, don't do that anymore, please. That's not really how, it's not what we do. And I remember that loan that we made, we'd gotten a video back and it was a thank you video. And the woman in Uganda who ran the program said, thank you so much. You don't know how much of a difference you've made. There's two things my people need, Jesus Christ and business, because both have the willpower to transform society. And I was like, that is a huge idea. That's a 10-year, 50-year, I need to go chase that. And so at that point, I think we'd probably gotten the cease and desist letter from the NCF General Counsel, who isn't at NCF anymore. And there's just the tenor has changed. But anyway, we'd gotten the cease and desist letter, but I knew that this was such a big idea, we had to go figure it out. So that's a little bit more of the backstory.
Okay, that's good. Good to know.
It does take a little bit of being radical to create new things. So Amy, I'm just going to stand up and say, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And today we fast forward, we'll get into this, but fast forward, I mean, by God's grace, you guys have helped facilitate almost a $500 million of investments. Is that right?
Yeah, more than a $500 million. We're at almost 550.
Wow.
550 million now. And it's working. That's... When Jeff and I started, I just looked at this the other day. We put together a little pitch deck and we went out and we were trying to raise money from founders. And we put together some models and we said, you know, maybe we'll do 10 million this year and then 15 million. And then, you know, in like 5 to 7 years, we'll be doing like 30 million a year. Well, we did 125 million last year. So we significantly undershot the potential, which was good because, yeah, we were just hoping that we'd be able to make ends meet for 3 years. And look at here we are.
Amy, for our listeners, tell us when you started. So how many years are we now?
2015 was our red shirt year, and we officially launched in 2016. And yeah, it's been super fun. There were three of us back in 2016. We're now 17 people. We have 540 companies in our portfolio. That's things like there's a creamery in Uganda.
We had John Porter on. Yeah, we had John Porter on with Misaka Creamery. So yeah, I love that.
Perfect. Technology in Silicon Valley. You know, one of our first investments was Abide, the prayer app. And we invested as a convertible loan. It converted. Then they sold. So we actually, that one was super successful. We cashed out of it. We've made loans to ministries to help them buy buildings. We've invested in startups. We've invested in later stage companies. Anything that can be redemptive, anything that can be good for people and for the community, that's something we can invest in.
You know, on the Generosity Now podcast, we talk a lot about whole life stewardship, and in that we also talk a lot about impact investing. And so we had Dana Wichterman on just recently, part of your team, and she did an incredible job. And we talk about different. We had John Halverson with Talatin on in the past as well. And so we talk about like different ways that people can get involved in impact investing. And so there are places where there are funds that people can invest their capital in, their charitable capital and their private capital into. And then and you guys actually probably have some funds that people are able to invest in. But more commonly, I at least describe the work of the Impact Foundation as the opportunity to be able to make kind of more direct investments to businesses, for profits and nonprofits, both an equity and debt position. Is that a good description? And would you just kind of flesh that out a little bit more for our listeners?
Yeah. It often starts with a relationship. Actually, it doesn't often. It always starts with a relationship. So it might look like my friend from Iowa, who has a relationship with a farmer in Zambia who does training programs for other farmers. And my friend from Iowa said, you know what? I know chicken feed. That's what I spent my life doing. I've sold my chicken feed business now. How about we start something like this in Zambia? Because there's chicken farmers and there's not a very clear market for chicken feed or for chicken production. So let's start something. And he comes back from a trip to Zambia and he says, I want to put $4 million into this thing in Zambia. And his financial advisor goes, that's a terrible idea. You should not do that. You are 72 years old. You do not need to be spending your retirement savings and your retirement life investing in Zambia. So he goes to his NCF friend, and his NCF friend says, that's a great idea. You should totally do that with your charitable capital. So they called me, and we sort of helped put all the pieces together. And now there's an actual chicken production business in Zambia, employing people, feeding people, and bringing the hope of the gospel. So it started with a relationship and an idea, and we helped put the pieces together. And that's pretty much what we do a lot of. Some of it's private capital. There are a few more funds that have gotten started in the 8-9 years since we've been doing this. And that's really helpful because not everybody has the time and capacity to start a chicken feed business halfway around the world. Some of us just want to dip our toe in the water. And that's what a fund is great for.
It's super, super helpful. And I know it took me a little while to get my head wrapped around how this works, you know, in that practical space. So it was helpful that you just helped, that you can do private capital or charitable capital. So the charitable capital often is a grant from NCF to Impact Foundation. Private would be outside of that. It can be different investment dollars. It can be debt or equity. And how does that work out? And how do you tend to how do people end up deciding some of those pieces?
Some of it's decided before people come to us. So for instance, Garden City is a private equity fund that's already up and going. And Mike, the CEO, has talked to dozens of people, hundreds of people about this idea. And some of them come to us and say, I want to invest in that with my charitable capital. So they make a grant from NCF to us. And then we sign the subscription documents. We're making the capital calls with Garden City. And then when the returns come back, they're going to go back to NCF to give away, or they can be reinvested. So that's an example where the deal terms are already set. You know, it's a 2-in-20 fund. Mike has pretty much set that up. Other instances might be where somebody has an idea of a business that they want to help fund, but it's not been put together yet. So for instance, the other extreme example would be my friend Suzanne, who said, I know this entrepreneur in Haiti, and she's running a charity right now, but they're selling shoes and she has employees and they want to open a new factory. So that entrepreneur needed to switch their business model from being entirely charitable to actually having a business component as well. And in that transition, she needed capital and she needed expertise. She needed lawyers. She needed a mentor. And so we brought the capital and we made introductions for her to mentors and things, people who could help her get launched. So that's an example where the two of them, the giver and the entrepreneur, came to us and said, we're not quite sure what we need. And so I sort of helped listen and provide advice on how they might structure the deal terms. We never set deal terms, but sometimes we might give advice that people could press into.
That's super helpful, because and just options, because some people are just learning what this is. And that's where you're, you know, laying out those and brainstorming some of those with givers and entrepreneurs is super helpful.
It's something you said, Lori, that I think it's helpful if we bring some clarity to, though, is you talked about people can use their private capital or their charitable capital. Through the Impact Foundation, directly, people are making charitable, using their charitable dollars to make these investments. They might just at the same time make an investment with their private capital in the same business, but they are effectively two different pockets. And so the charitable dollars are coming through the Impact Foundation. Then that return comes back into that same bucket, stays charitable, whereas the private capital is can be made alongside at the same time, but that stays as private capital, is taxable, and things like that.
Exactly.
We've just been Lori along the sides from the sidelines, and so sometimes it's even good just to get you, Amy, here so we can bounce ideas off of. And I think what's sometimes the best is, you've given us some great examples already, but if you'd share even a couple more. And what I would love to hear also is like, we had a gathering of some of our generosity council, and some of them said, like, hey, you keep sharing all these great stories about like where it's worked well. I wonder if there's a place that you've seen that this actually hasn't ended up working well, that might also be helpful for people to realize, like, okay, maybe this is a better place that we use our charitable capital and make a charitable gift as opposed to an investment.
You know, one of the gifts of being an entrepreneur is you tend to always have a fairly positive outlook. And the way to keep a fairly positive outlook is to not remember the failures. And so I'm sure that things have not gone well, but I tend to not carry them around with me. So I have to really think about that for a second. Things that have not gone well. In 2018, I went to Ethiopia and we were there to visit Verde Beef and some other Verdant Frontiers businesses. Verdant Frontiers builds large scale businesses in Africa. So we're in Ethiopia. We travel out of the capital city by car, and we had to leave really early in the morning because there were some rumblings that there might be some protests in the capital city. So we leave at like 3:30 in the morning. It's pitch dark as we're leaving. We're driving for a couple hours. And all of a sudden we get stopped. And I'm sitting in the third row of this vehicle. And what gets back to me is we have to stop because there's glass in the road. And I'm like, glass? Just sweep it away. Well, it turns out that this was actually a coordinated protest effort, that every road out of the capital city was being barricaded. So it wasn't just glass. It was telephone poles and rocks and huge boulders that everybody from this community had come together to block the roads. And so we had to pull off the road, and we're in the gas station parking lot, basically, for a couple of hours, stuck. And meanwhile, these trucks of federal police come rolling in. And these guys are loaded for bear. They are just absolutely stocked full of guns and ammunition. And the protesters have rocks and not nearly enough fear. So the protesters are standing in the road throwing rocks at these police officers with giant AK-47s. And Jeff and I are standing on the side of the road going, you know, we probably should have thought about business continuity and Impact Foundation because I don't know what's going to happen. So they shut down all the cell towers in the country so that the protesters couldn't coordinate. Thankfully, the Verde guys had sat phones. And so they get on the sat phone and they call down to the farm and to the feedlot, and they send up, they coordinate this effort of like local militias to come and get us. And there's four truckloads of local militia people who come and rescue us. They load us up in their truck and we're like hiding below the glass in the back of this truck. And as we pull up to each barricade, the local militias, because they're local, you know, are communicating to the people who blockaded. These are diplomats, basically. These are important people. We have to let them through. And so we make it all the way through, get to the farm. It was, I wasn't nearly as scared as I probably should have been. But we were relieved when we got there because we could breathe again. But the reason that Verde was able to break through that barricade was because they had so many friends. And the reason they had so many friends is because they were the only employer in the whole area. And they weren't just a great employer. They also provided healthcare, and they were providing, you know, training programs for kids. And they were a good neighbor. And so the locals were willing to help. So that's an example of a failure, but also a great success. Verde Beef didn't last much beyond 2018 because of a lot of market forces within and outside of Ethiopia. But what they've learned is a lot of really important lessons that are helping the next group of verdant businesses really scale and have a great impact. I think the easiest lesson to take from the Verde story of why Verde Beef closed, and the lesson to take from that is to really understand local life better. So what happens in Ethiopia, everybody has a cow, and the cow is like your bank account. And what Verde was doing was they were buying cows from the locals, fattening them up, and then shipping the beef overseas. The problem is, in Ethiopia, the cattle genetics are terrible. Like, you never find a fat cow in Ethiopia because the genetics just don't allow them to fatten. It's not that people can't afford to feed them. It's actually the genetics are terrible. So if Verdant Frontiers had done sort of more work on the front end to understand the local context, it might not have gone into the beef business. So that's an example of a failure that we can learn from.
Hey, Amy, give us another story of like, what's a great investment you've seen that was, it was probably a much better investment than could have been done with just charitable grant dollars?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we're really encouraged by is what's happening in multifamily housing. There's a couple of apartment owners, actually several apartment owners, who realized that they have an opportunity to not just provide housing, which is super important, but also to be a good neighbor. And there's one out of Birmingham called Weldon Field. And they said, we've been in businesses' missions overseas, funding businesses' missions, but we've also been in the apartment business since the 70s. What if we brought those two ideas together? And so Weldon Field went out and brought in a lead spiritual officer and partnered with some evangelists to actually live in their communities and just be a good neighbor. So they might host social gatherings. They might, you know, when somebody brings a new baby home, they'll be there with a welcome box. And sometimes what happens is they're there when no one else is to really serve the needs of the community. And in so doing, they have the opportunity to present a case for why they have hope, for why they love well. And there's just tons and tons of stories coming out of Weldon Field and other multifamily housing sponsors of people coming to faith because someone else was a good neighbor. And the wonderful thing about multifamily housing is we get regular checks. So what investor doesn't want a check? Weldon Field sends us regular dividend checks, and it's lovely.
How fun. So we did talk about those investors. So who is the typical impact investor that you've seen?
Impact investing, or we could say faith-driven investing, has grown from a couple of really important movements that have gone before us. One is the generosity movement, which you guys are well familiar with. Another one is the faith at work movement, which says everything we do at work matters. And I can worship the Lord by making a great table just as much as I can worship the Lord by singing a song or speaking on stage. And so if my work matters to the Lord, maybe the collection of what we do matters as well. The client are people who are well-versed in the message of generosity and have believed and have come to understand that God owns it all. And as a result of the knowledge that God owns it all, that affects how we should steward our resources. It's people who've set a financial finish line, who've invested into their donor advised fund. And typically it's people who are fairly entrepreneurial, involved in business. Sometimes they might have found that they're a little bored. You know, maybe they had their wealth event and there's only so much golf you can play. There's only so many vacations you can take before you're like, gosh, maybe there's more that I could do. And so that's when people start to say, maybe I should invest in another entrepreneur with my money and with my time and become a mentor. It's people who are wondering to themselves, how can I make sure that my money doesn't mess up my kids? How can I best share the love of Christ in a hurting and broken world? How can I be sure that when I show up in eternity and God says, let's talk about how you stewarded my stuff? How can I be more confident that he's going to say, good job, I like what you did there? It's people who are wrestling with those kinds of questions.
Yeah, something that I think a distinction that's also super helpful that we've shared with some folks is we have we have some younger givers who are generous but are also not accredited or qualified purchasers, and a lot of these type of investments you've talked about, that's usually a requirement to be able to make for them. And so a way they can actually use their charitable capital, because the Impact Foundation, is actually the investor in the long run and that qualified purchaser. And so it doesn't make up a large swath of your investments, but there is a place sometimes for non-accredited investors to be able to use their charitable capital to make investments in organizations making a great kingdom impact. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're the investor. And so the person who has the donor advised fund doesn't necessarily have to be an accredited investor themselves. And at the other end, people who've been investing for a long time sometimes wake up and realize, I'm tired of collecting K-1s. You know, I have 25 K-1s that I have to collect every year, and I don't want to burden my kids with that when I'm no longer the one doing my own tax return. Or, gosh, I just don't want to have to manage all this anymore. And so our core customer is the middle of the spectrum where they're actively placing investments. But at either end of the spectrum, there's also a whole group of people who say, I'm not yet an accredited investor, but I want to get in the game. Or people who say, I'm kind of tired of managing this myself. Let me just turn it over to you.
Huh. That's great. And I also was actually just talking with a young group of guys and their families. They're from the graduates of Texas, and they started like this board of directors for their life. And they actually do shared giving together. And we also talked about the concept of, so they have a giving fund that they actually share, and they all five of them contribute into it. And we were actually talking to them about the opportunity that they could actually pool those resources and together make investments in organizations making a kingdom impact. And so that's just another, I think, a beautiful case study where you can get a group of friends to make this investment together using charitable dollars and be able to make these investments through the Impact Foundation.
Absolutely. We're starting that with a group of women investors who say, I want to figure this out, but I don't want to just figure it out by myself. It's way better to do it in community. And so they're pooling investment dollars to and doing diligence themselves and learning about investing together.
Amy, is there an entry point for people dollar-wise of what the investment would need to be?
$25,000 is sort of a rough minimum. There are instances where we might invest lower than that. Some entrepreneurs can't take $25,000, particularly in parts of Africa. But $25,000 is kind of a good place to think about starting.
Mm-hmm. And I've actually had the experience with somebody who put a donor advised fund together to be able to actually start that with that pool idea of a handful of people putting into that to make that minimum $25,000.
That's worked well for groups like Dignity Coconuts, who are processing really high quality coconut oil and coconut products, I guess, providing excellent jobs. But it's hard to do at the scale they're doing it. It would be easier at a much larger scale, but they feel like to be a good neighbor requires them to stay the size they are. And so sometimes they have people contributing to their NCF giving fund to allow them to make loans later on down the road.
That's awesome. Amy, you and I shared the stage at Denver Institute's Business for the Common Good years ago, and you talked about the principle of gleaning. And I'm going to pull back into your cobwebs of your brain, but things that you said were just really, really impactful, I think, to the folks in the audience and to me. Could you flesh that out a little bit?
It starts with, what is this definition of success for an investment? I've watched our clients struggle with this idea that I want to be a successful investor. Again, the idea of stewardship. And also, I'm not sure that I'm doing the best I can for the causes I care about if I'm extracting every dollar I can. So the definition of a successful investment that's been told to us by the world is to get the maximum amount of financial return that you can possibly get for the risk that you're taking. That's very extractive. And so I looked through scripture to say, what other definitions of success might there be? What other models might there be? And this idea of gleaning from Leviticus 19, I think, where the Israelites were told, if you're a landowner, don't harvest all the way to the edges of your field. Actually, leave something there for widows, for the foreigner, people who aren't able to own their own land to come and work so that they have food for their families. And I was like, well, that's intriguing because that has legs. And I think it has a corollary for investing in the following way. This whole idea of gleaning is about creating access to the means of production for people who have previously been cut out. And it's about sacrifice on the part of the landowner. It's about excellence. There's an element of transformation in relationship. So think about excellence, for example. If you're a landowner trying to feed your whole family, you can't leave something around the edges and still be able to feed your family unless you're doing everything you can to be excellent throughout the process. It's about access. So for instance, Ruth, fast forward from the book of Leviticus to the book of Ruth. Ruth was actually able to come in and glean from Boaz's field because he was practicing gleaning. And she had to come in and work to be able to, it wasn't a handout. She was working for the food that she got. So there's an element of access. And then the transformation that happens in relationship, the reason that the book of Ruth is in the Bible is because of the idea of the kinsman redeemer, the transformation in relationship. And then the lineage of Jesus traces through the book of Ruth. It's an incredible story. And then the last element is this idea of sacrifice. And this is where I really think we can unlock people's brains to think about investing a little differently. So it's not that maybe I take a lower financial return, not because I'm a bad investor or because I worked a bad deal, or even because the entrepreneur that I'm supporting isn't capable, I can actually choose to take a lower investment, a lower return as an investor, for the sake of leaving something on the table, for the sake of creating jobs where there might not otherwise be jobs, for the sake of the company having room in or having margin to provide job training for somebody who wouldn't otherwise have jobs.
That's
so
great.
I think there's something more in that idea of gleaning that we should explore.
No, that's good. Your conversation really resonates with the conversation we had with Greg Lernahan in a much earlier episode, where he breaks down his 2x2, and he's the past chair of the Impact Foundation and part of that the board there. And but he talks about this 2x2 and just kind of where we're aligning our capital and on the spectrum. And there is, you know, he even says, I think there is a place to take a concession returns. That way, we're not extracting the highest in a margins and maybe even an exploitive nature. And so beautiful, beautiful principle. Thanks for helping pull that back out and sharing it with our listeners. Amy, curious, if listeners want to know more about the Impact Foundation, what's the best way for them to get connected, to go about and say, hey, I've got this crazy idea. I don't know if this is something I can do. What how do they get in contact?
Yeah, so our website is a good place to start. As always, somebody can feel free to reach out to me or anybody else on the team to have a conversation. If there's an idea that you're saying, I wonder if it's possible, we can probably figure it out.
One last thing that's good for our listeners to know about the Impact Foundation and making impact investments, that we've primarily talked about for-profit businesses today, and many of your investments are to those for-profits. But there have been occasions where it actually can help a nonprofit. We know we worked together on a group that was trying to buy some real estate in Hawaii. And for them, it was a pretty darn big lift. And using some investment dollars to help get to the finish line was the thing that they needed to be able to purchase that property. And so really, if you have a crazy idea and you're like, I'd love to see this happen, it is worth a conversation with the team, the incredible team that's at the Impact Foundation, because in a lot of scenarios, you're like, yeah, we can make that work. So love how you guys think outside the box to get things done.
Thank you very much.
Amy, it's been great having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. On the Generosity Now podcast, we seek to inspire, equip, and connect our listeners for generous kingdom impact and whole life stewardship. For more information on us, please check us out at ncfgiving.com/Rocky Mountains and generositynow.org. Please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a 5-star review and share it with your network. And today we have a doxology coming out of Colossians 3:23. Lori's going to read for us.
Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it is the Lord Christ you are serving.
Yes and amen. Hey, Amy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Amy, thanks so much. We really enjoyed this.